Thank you very much, Don. And I got to tell you, from the little bit that I heard, it sounds like you did an excellent job facilitating in Jacqueline's place. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed it.
You're welcome. It was awesome. I loved it.
Good. I'll tell Jacqueline. That's wonderful. I'm very happy to hear it, as you can tell. I have been at the retreat. I left today around 3 in order to come home. But I was at the retreat all day Monday and today until 3. They're having a dyad self-inquiry retreat at the retreat house. I have a pic that I can show you guys that they let me take, which was very nice of them. Well, here's the, let's see if you can see this. Here's the, can you see that okay? That's the sunset. Can you see it? It's kind of pretty. And then this is them in dyads. And I'll tell you what, they are doing some magnificent self-inquiry. Really, they are, it is incredible. And you know, they worked all day yesterday. And then this morning when they got up, I think everybody was feeling resistance. I don't think anybody wanted to be there. And by 11, they were hugging each other, like all that resistance had just died away. So it's kind of fun, funny watching what happens to people at these really intense retreats. Not all of our retreats are as intense as the self-inquiry dyad retreat. But you know, when you're really intense like that, that resistance does come up, but resistance is just a temporary thing. And so then it passes on by and there's this love underneath it. And you can just see everybody going through that. I think that my guess is, I guess you can find out for yourself, but my guess is that they are all really glad they went ahead and came to this retreat. Pretty much everybody, I think, everyone confessed they were afraid to come to the retreat. And some of them, their minds were even working really, really hard to try and think of a reason not to come. But I'll tell you what, I think they're all really happy there. They're doing some excellent work. I mean, it's just incredible what's happening. But I had to leave them because my brother is getting married, and Thursday I have to leave for DC to go to his wedding, and I need tomorrow to, like, you know, do laundry and that kind of thing. I haven't even been home in a week. I've been in La Vida for a whole week. So I had to leave them and come on back. But Jacqueline and Anne are facilitating this retreat, and they have it well under control. So I look forward to hearing after the retreat, hearing what everybody has to share at our next retreat house, reflections from the retreat house, which will be the first Sunday in May. I look forward to hearing what they have to share. As a result of having been at the retreat, I am again behind with you guys. I was caught up as of Sunday reading the forum, but I will tell you that again, not all of our retreats are this intense. So please don't think, oh my God, I'm never going to an Awakening Together retreat, because the other retreats are much more gentle. This retreat is purposefully intense, and it goes from like 7 in the morning till 9:30 at night. Our other retreats do not. Ron can tell you, he's been. Francine, have you been to a retreat yet? You've been too, right? Yeah, you went to the self-inquiry retreat in January, I think, or the natural meditation retreat in February. Yes. So you guys know we don't work that hard at all the retreats, right? You get a little bit more space.
Right.
Right. But at this retreat, it's very intense, and so So since I was busy with them all of that time, as you can imagine, I didn't have time for the forum. I had barely time to sleep. So I have not read the forum on Monday or today, and I even think I'm not gonna. I think I'm not gonna tomorrow try to catch up. I feel like, you know, I have a lot of other things to do too, so I think tomorrow I'm just going to start with tomorrow. So I apologize, but it just feels like the gentlest thing to do if I try and catch up. And plus, you know, the work has been piling up for two days too, because Jacqueline and I haven't been here. And as I mentioned, I have laundry and packing, and I teach twice tomorrow. It just feels like I would like be like way too much. So I will not be reading what you wrote. But if there's anything that you would like to share tonight from what you wrote, especially on Monday and Tuesday, since I didn't read it, if there were any insights that you think would be nice to share, I would love to hear that. So let me start by opening it up and see if anyone has anything to share. Be quiet. That's good. All right, then. Tell you what, then. I will get into what I did collect, because I did collect quite a bit. The only days I missed were Monday and Tuesday, so I still have, and we usually don't get through my entire collection anyway, so I think we're okay. Okay, so the first thing I want to share is actually, I have down here Manuela's post for number 195. And Manuela was a little behind us, and so the rest of us didn't do 195 in this past week, but she did. She's been doing a lot, though. I think she might be catching up. But I want to share her post. So let me go to Awakening Together. Sorry about the headline there. Okay, my brain's not working very well. You can tell I've been at a dyad retreat. I'm like, how do you get to Awakening Together? But it's coming back. All right, let's go look for Manuela. Here she is. And then hopefully the last week will help me find it. No, it looks like I'm going to have to go back further than the last week. So we'll just say all time, and we'll just look for it. There's 182, 187, 189. Here we go, 195. All right, let me go ahead and re-quote 195 before we look at this. Oh, she probably has it right there, it looks like. When one thoroughly investigates all this, it is clearly seen that pure consciousness alone exists and nothing else. It is beyond description. At the end of the investigation, utter silence alone remains. So let's look at what Manuela has written. Pure consciousness. By the way, should I tell you? I guess I will go ahead and tell you. I don't have Manuela's permission, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you. A couple years ago, she did have a permanent realization. So, so she's writing a lot from experience. And I think you'll be able to hear that now. I believe, but based on the language that we use, Manuela has awoken to the I Am presence and is continuing her awakening now. But sometimes you can hear that different tone. You can hear that different tone, that there's already some realization there when she's writing. So pure consciousness does not include the I Am presence, which is a habit, a sense of an object, or any other object. Pure consciousness is the realization of having walked through the final door. Until then, I can only talk of consciousness, because that's her level. You know what I call the second principle of God? That is her level of seeing. I can only talk of consciousness. But from my understanding, pure consciousness is the same consciousness, but with absolutely no identification to anything, just absolute awareness. Consciousness is what we have known all our life, but have overlooked for everything else. We tend to claim the everything else rather than consciousness. Consciousness is beyond description. So the ego will either make it out to be fireworks, a magical, spiritual, out-of-this-world experience, or ordinary, even disappointing and boring. It is out of this world and ordinary, but not the way the ego understands. It is not of humanness or the world. And it is of every single moment and always constant. In order to claim it, you can't think about it. The thinking mind has to go. The thinking mind conceals the realization. Deep meditation and contemplation are the best ways to thoroughly investigate all of this. At the end of the investigation, utter silence alone remains. In the silence, realization is claimed. Consciousness recognizing consciousness. In the first awakening, consciousness is claimed. But the I am presence lingers until it is seen as a habit object and attachment, identification, desire for it is surrendered. It is what Regina says is very thin ego sense. The very thin ego sense can seem like a fun game until it's not. Because attention can go out and play in the world, but awareness of consciousness is always there. This game can bite you on the bum because it's a distraction game. But like all desires, one can't see it until they do. I've just recently realized this back and forth game is a hidden pleasure, which is really a desire. The desire for the I am presence. In this stage, you know who you are. But if the mind is not totally purified, you still apply truth to whatever arises. And it's all seen through. Some people who have totally purified their mind, totally qualified mind, upon hearing the truth, claim consciousness, and also, at that time, walk through the final door. And this is from James Schwartz. So what this is saying is, some people may experience an awakening to consciousness, the I am presence, and then later, another awakening, which is called the final doorway to the absolute. But James Schwartz is saying some people can actually kind of do both. You know, like go to one and then go to the other, because they have so prepared themselves for it. So I just think it's nice to be aware there isn't one way to do this or one way it will happen. It's probably a better way of saying it. Desire for the I exist state can be a hard object to see because it's a feeling habit that we've known every day, all our life, just like how the ego person sense feels. I am just starting to realize I don't need to be present. And then here's kind of a story from her life that kind of illustrates what she's writing here. Usually, now it looks like she makes not television sets, but sets for TV programs. That's what I'm gathering from reading this. That's her job. She says, usually when I have a temporary TV set to make, a design arises in me and I go to my trusty white goods store bins and grab the necessary fridge boxes, light on cost and fast. If I can't find all the fridge boxes, I drive to other white goods store bins until I find what I need and usually finish the day overtired. And annoyance thoughts arise at doing unpaid overtime. Why? Because this I perfected through past experiences, and I desire my work to be just the right solution for what is needed for the job. Last Friday, I needed to get 3 fridge and 2 washing machine boxes to create a Yoshi's Craft World set for a children's TV show for Nintendo. However, the bins were only recently emptied, and there was only 1 fridge box and a few washing machine ones. Something was different within my vision. I watched as I just took what I could with no attachment to anything at all. It wasn't a problem. There were no thoughts appearing, only silence and insights. The ease was flowing. No problems existed. Life was giving me one fridge, and three washing machine boxes, so that must be what was needed for the set. Happily, I took it home, and the painting and making flowed. I had limited paint, too, because of budget cuts, but it just happened out of nothing. I watched as actions flowed out of the body with ease and joy. The insight arose. Here, this is what today gives you. With no thinking, ease, leisure, and joy, it all worked and appeared. My coworkers and Nintendo loved it. The set was so flexible and not overdone. I was watching unattached the whole time. This was wonderful. Something was different. So what was different? The desirelessness, unattached, and not identified with anything. Desires is trying to do more, get more, plan more. I realized how desires attach the person. Desire to be good at my job, to get praise, to do it my way, to stick to the plan, and the desire to be, to exist. I saw that you don't need the person and the I exist sense or the I exist habit. It just all happens perfectly without you. There is ease when there is no attachment to you. Witness it all. Pure experiencing with no identification. Desire is not true pleasure. Oh man, bring on pure consciousness. So I will stop my sharing. Does anybody have any comments or anything based on what Manuela has written?
It just sounds like she has let go to me. That sounded amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that you all would enjoy hearing that. So hopefully Manuela doesn't mind that I shared. It's a public post. Right? So, yeah. So that was the first thing that I collected this week that I wanted to share with you. The next thing that I collected this week that I wanted to share with you, let's go look at quote 36. This was one of our review quotes. Holding in their hands the mirror, the scripture which declares the self alone is to be known. Many, alas, study with care the text and commentaries. Only few seek the self and gain true life. And the reason that I selected this quote for us to look at one more time, because this now kind of makes the third time we're looking at it, it's really because of that last line. Only few seek the self and gain true life. Of course, we've talked about before that teachers like Michael Langford and Elie Ruzdahr, I think Elie Ruzdahr says things like only 97% do not awaken, only 3% awaken. And then she says, and I'm being generous. and Michael Langford uses terms like one in a million. My guess is he's being extremely generous. And sometimes people get frustrated because it just sounds like what the ego mind hears in that is, I can't. Right? I can't. Only a few people awaken, therefore I can't. And it's interesting because that's not what they're saying. That's the ego interpretation. Here's what they're saying. Only few seek the self and gain true life. What they're really saying is only a few genuinely try, right? That most people, in fact, Elie Ruzdahr is very, very clear. She says most people just want experience. They don't want truth, you know? And so the reason that the awakening doesn't occur is because that's just not where they're, that's not what they're living their life for. It's not what they truly want. It's not how they're applying themselves. They may enjoy reading spiritual material, having spiritual discussions, but a genuine commitment to awaken is not there. And I just like to stop and pause and look at this again, because I think it's really important that we know that we can. We just have to want it and apply ourselves in that direction rather than applying ourselves in other directions. I actually received a 10-minute audio from Michael Langford. Maybe I'll just play the first few minutes of it. Let me see if I think it's in my email. Let me make sure I didn't accidentally delete it. I was so tired this morning, not telling what I did. I was trying to type in another daily update for you guys, you know, to come out to tell you what quotes to read. I made like 5 mistakes in 1 daily update. I was so tired. I could hardly work at all. Just from the intensity of this particular, I do have it. Just the intensity of this particular retreat. But again, I don't want to scare anyone away from it because it's a retreat I highly, highly, highly recommend if you want to seek the self. And the intensity is by design so that your ego conditioning breaks down. But I was very, very tired this morning and unable to work. But I did not accidentally delete this. So let's go ahead and listen to it.
The ego illusion, which can also be called the false identity, which can also be called the human mind, this bundle of thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and concepts, would like you to believe that it cannot be brought to a final end, that all sorrow and suffering cannot be brought to a final end, that you have to keep waking up in this world, this illusion every day, that has had 15,000 wars in the last 5,000 years. Today, on the day you're listening to this, 1 billion people will commit an act of verbal or physical violence on another 1 billion people, and that's not even in war. And the ego illusion would like you to believe it's not possible to end this illusion, to bring all this sorrow and suffering and violence and evil to a final end. However, it is possible to bring it to an end. To a final end. However, not as a theory or a concept or an idea or a belief, but as an eternal direct experience. What remains when the ego illusion has been brought to a final end and all of its sorrow and the world and universe that it created, what remains is the true self. The true self is infinite, eternal awareness, love, bliss that has never known any sorrow or suffering in all of eternity. It is absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect love and infinite love. But not as a concept, idea, or theory, or belief. This is a eternal direct experience that is available to you. The true self is an absolutely perfect eternal joy, happiness, bliss. And love. Your mind may not be able, may not be willing to allow you to see even the possibility of this, to wake up from the human dream, to bring this sorrow and suffering and violence and illusion to a final end, to bring the false identity that is the source of all of this illusion and evil and violence and sorrow and suffering to a final end. It may not allow you to see that. You can turn in to your feelings because your heart knows this. It knows that there is something infinitely better and higher than imagining that you are some human living on some planet called Earth. There is something in you that can feel the call of infinite love. A calling to infinite love, a beckoning, an invitation, but not a mind invitation, a heartfelt invitation to realize the true self and know this absolutely perfect infinite love in eternal direct experience.
Yeah, so again, the reason I shared the quote again, and of course the reason I shared that little bit of the Michael Langford audio is because I'm sure we have all experienced, right? Is there anybody here who has not experienced the mind telling you that you can't do this? I mean, how many people have experienced the mind telling you you can't? Yeah, it should be every one of us. Which proves we have the same mind. Right. In fact, I won't go into that. That's kind of a thing. So what I want to point out then again is that this particular quote number 36 says, only few seek the self. You know, that means only a few actually try. And that's completely within your power. That's completely within your decision. That's completely within your choice, whether you want to be one of the ones that actually tries to have the realization that Buddha had, that Jesus had, that Ramana Maharshi had, that Nisargadatta Maharaj had. You know, Nisargadatta Maharaj was as common gets in the world, right? He was the son of a poor Indian, I believe, farmer. He had to quit school in elementary school to work the fields with his dad. Now, he did have some intelligence about him because he grew up to start little cigarette stands, and he actually had a chain of little cigarette stands. So, you know, coming from a poor farmer, he was pretty successful. But he's just a common man. Just a common man. You know, nothing special about this guy, except that when his guru told him that he was more than he thought he was, and that if he would focus on the I Am presence to the exclusion of all else, he would awaken to his true self. And the only thing different about Nisargadatta Maharaj and everybody else who doesn't awaken is that he said, okay. And then he did it. That's the only difference, right? And I think he claims that he woke up in only 3 years, right? So that's why I wanted to bring us back to this quote. Only few seek the self and gain true life. And just remind us that, you know, each and every one of us can do this if we want to. There isn't anybody here that doesn't have what it takes. I repeat that again. There is not anybody here, you know, who is lacking, who doesn't have what it takes. We all have what it takes. We all are the exact same as those who have already awakened. Right? Are exactly the same as Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, Jesus Christ, Buddha, and others that we can list. Any comments before I move on to the next thing that I collected? All right, the next thing I collected then is quote 73. I will tell you, after being in the dyad retreat for 2 days, which is a very intimate experience with the other people, being in Zoom feels a little disconnected. It's kind of funny. You know, I'll get back into the flow of it, but I feel a little disconnected from you guys because I've been so intimate with some Awakening Together members in the last 2 days that this just feels a little odd. 73. Unready means afraid. You are afraid of what you are. Your destination is the whole, but you are afraid that you will lose your identity. This is childishness, clinging to the toys, to your desires and fears, opinions and ideas. Give it all up and be ready for the real to assert itself. And the reason I picked this quote up was really for the last line, because I felt like the last line really describes our job. Those of you who have been Course in Miracles students, it's, you know, there's some line in the course, I'm not going to quote it exactly right, but it says something like, you know, don't try to do the Holy Spirit's job, right? Which implies you have a job and the Holy Spirit has a job. And so it's good to be clear on what your job is. What's your job in this awakening process? And your job is to give it all up, as the words are here. I say, let it go, but give it all up. Your job is to see it and let it go. See it and let it go. And then notice the real will assert itself. That's just like in A Course in Miracles when it says God takes the last step, right? The real will assert itself. So you just let go, and the awakening itself will come. Give it all up and be ready for the real to assert itself. I will tell you, I started off as the facilitator of the dyads. I don't know if you guys saw the description. It said an introduction by Regina Dawn Akers. But then I switched because I wanted people to start accepting Jacqueline and Anne as the leaders, especially since I was going to leave. So I started it. And the main reason I started it is because, you know, they were a little uncomfortable. They kind of wanted me to get the ball rolling. They probably won't need that ever again. They're probably going to get on such a roll that it'll be okay if I never show up to facilitate another dyad retreat. But this was their first one. They kind of wanted me to get the ball rolling. So I did. But then I stepped back and said, okay, I'm not going to play leader anymore. I'm going to let you guys do it. And I started being a participant, which I liked way better, to be honest. And as a participant, I got to participate in the dyads. And I had a number of experiences, insights, one of which, and of course, one of which was the falling away of all identity. And what was amazing with the falling away of all identity is I knew in an instant what the word infinite means, although it can't really be explained. But I knew in an instant what the word infinite means. And I knew that infinite, you can only experience infinite from the I don't know mind. It's impossible to experience infinite from the I know mind. Identity, our personal identity, is a great big giant I know. You know, like in the dyad, you're trying to explain your experience to your partner. And I remember telling my partner, you know, if I go back to this Regina thing and I tell you what it is. I mean, you know, I could write and write and write and write and write about Regina. You know, I have a whole history that can be written down, preferences, desires, things she wants to avoid, things she dreams about, things she likes, things she doesn't like. I mean, obviously people write biographies all the time, autobiographies all the time. And that autobiography, well, let's say they're this thick, you know, 350 pages. It's still not everything about the human, right? Stuff has to be left out. So you can write and write and write and write and write about the human. Look at how much you think you know about who you are. You know, and every bit of that I know is what's blocking infinity. And what was amazing is from the point of view of infinity, even though there's so much, like I said, you can just write and write and write and write and write about who you are if you really get into it. But that looks so tiny and limited. Claustrophobic even. It looks so tiny and limited from the point of view of infinity. And from that point of view, it seemed ridiculous not to give it all up. I know from the point of view of the human, it seems hard. But from the point of view of infinity, it's ridiculous. And that's really what he's saying. I mean, look what he calls it. He says, you are afraid that you will lose your identity. And then he says, this is childishness, clinging to toys. You see, he's looking from the point of view of infinity, and he's basically saying it's ridiculous. It's a matter of not understanding what we're trading for, right? Not being able to imagine it with this limited mind. And so therefore we cling to what we know. I think that's all I have to say about quote 73. Is there anyone who has a comment or anything to say before I move on? All right, then I will move on to the next thing that I have collected. Quote number 55, going backwards. Quote number 55, don't be interested in the words that the mind is serving up for you. It is putting them there to tempt you into a stream of thoughts that will take you away from the self. You have to ignore them all and focus on the light that is shining within you. Oh my God. Talk about, you know, Michael Langford's teaching in one sentence. I mean, look at that sentence. You have to ignore, you know, here they're saying the words. You have to ignore the words. He really means the word thoughts. You have to ignore them all and focus on the light that, of course, means awareness that is shining within you. And we talked a little bit last week about how, you know, when you're in meditation and the words come, that typically what the words are coming for is to take your attention away from awareness. And they can even be spiritual words. You know, like the words could be thinking about a quote you read today. And pretty soon you're completely lost in the mind, even though it enticed you with thoughts about a quote you read today. Right. And I see Nancy sitting there shaking her head. So you have to ignore them all. And I did point out to you that occasionally very, very short, like one or two words or three words will come that focuses you. And they have a completely different feel. First of all, they're not a trail of words. What takes you off is the trail of words. Right. These are very brief, very to the point, and they're focusing you. So it's not really true that you ignore all words. You probably ignore 99.8% of the words, nearly all words. But I wanted to read this quote and then go look at the last quote of number 105. So let's go look at that. Now, the last line of number 105. I can see why it was clear, the last line. This is that long quote. The last line says, as a matter of fact, such repeated attempts to go beyond the words is what is called meditation. Right? So, again, that's exactly what we're doing in meditation, is learning to ignore the words and simply focus on awareness. That is meditation. As a matter of fact, such repeated attempts, I love those words too. You know, he's saying, and I trust that he is speaking from his own experience, and this is Nisargadatta Maharaj. He's not saying here, hey, close your eyes and be like me, ignore the words. he's saying repeated attempts. My guess is that's what it was for him too. Because remember, he was just a normal guy, right? Repeated attempts to ignore the words is what is called meditation. Focusing on the light instead. Francine.
Sometimes what happens during meditation is that it seems like a prayer comes up. But again, that can be a lot of words. And I think it's a trick, but sometimes I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why, and in fact, this particular quote, quote 105, does talk about the value of the word, right? What I hear Nisargadatta saying is that you contemplate the words, and then you go into meditation and ignore the words. So like when we're in contemplation, that's a great time for a prayer to come up, when you're writing, when you're in contemplation. But when you go into meditation, at that point, I would ignore any stream of words, a long stream, any stream of words. Images. You know, I think I've told you guys this before, that when I was, this was a couple of years ago, but when I was first really learning to meditate, the ego tempted me. Apparently, what I have that I wasn't aware of until the ego started tempting me is I love places. You know, like I love Okinawa, Japan, where I lived. I love Italy. I love India. I love my childhood home. I love places. I have a huge fondness for places. So what the ego did during my meditation is it started bringing me images of these places that I love, that I haven't seen, like maybe a place I haven't been in 25 years or something. And the images were very detailed. These were not like memories. I mean, these were very detailed. And it was almost like a virtual game. Like I could walk around a corner and see what was around the corner. And it was like being there again. And it felt so good because these were places that I just love and I haven't been there in so long. And then I caught on to what was happening. It was distracting me from awareness, watching awareness. And so I started learning, and the places would start to arise, to ignore them, you know, to say, no, I'm not interested in that. What sees this? You know, what's aware of this? And return my attention. And pretty soon, they quit showing up in my meditation. They were only showing up because I was falling for the temptation. And once I quit falling for it, they quit showing up. But there are all kinds of things that can appear in meditation. In fact, Muji and Ramana Maharshi and Michael Langford, they're all very clear that often these things look like holy things, holy visions, right? Because you're a spiritual person with a spiritual intent, and the ego is very aware that the spiritual will capture your attention. And so these holy things show up to capture your attention, and your attention goes back outward, out towards the holy image, rather than staying focused on awareness. So during meditation, our role is to ignore everything except for awareness. Repeated attempts to do that, right? That takes practice. Jay, I saw your hand.
Are these experiences that you have in meditation and your understanding or experience a kind of signpost of some kind of way, or are they just to be merely ignored, period? I guess it's, do they serve any other purpose other than to distract you or you?
Well, the reason I'm saying is because there is occasionally a vision that shows for a reason. For example, recently in my I Am That teaching, I was reading from the final talks of Nisargadatta Maharaj, and what he says in that is, he says, I didn't know really how to meditate. I mean, you know, he just had this one meeting with his guru. His guru told him to go focus on the I Am presence. But again, Nisargadatta is just like all of us. I mean, if you guys didn't have all of this spiritual teaching yet, okay, imagine you're back at an earlier point, and I said to you, you know, you're not who you take yourself to be. You are the divine. Just go and focus on the I Am presence to the exclusion of all else. Do you think you'd know how to do that? You know, Nisargadatta didn't either, but he tried. He had the intention. He had the heart. And what happened was he had a vision in meditation that taught him what the I Am presence was and how to focus on it. But again, the difference was the purpose of that vision. It wasn't arising to call him away from the I Am presence, like my places were. It arose to teach him what the I Am presence is, right? So again, just like there are some exceptions with words, there are some exceptions with things like visions, but you have to be very discerning. Is this helping you to focus on the I Am presence or awareness or whatever? Or is this seductively drawing your attention away from it? Right, that's really what you're looking for. Yes, Jay.
Another question. After I had that big sort of ego fraud thing that came up, remember I talked to you about that? There was, after that, a shift into greater peace in myself. Like it really felt like something inside let go, and it stayed with me. I mean, even amidst activity, there's an undercurrent of peace that I'm much more aware of. It's not that any activity in my life has changed from one week to the next, but the undercurrent that I'm feeling and constantly aware of is like a little higher, like a river that's raised up 5 feet. Now, that's a bad analogy for living in Libya.
Very bad analogy.
Forget that analogy.
Playing sandbags today.
It seems like as pieces of the ego thinking are falling away, there is a notching up of this piece that just seems to naturally occur. I didn't do anything at the moment I felt this shift. It just happened.
Well, we talked a while ago about your job. Your job is giving it all up. And what you gave up was the belief that you were a fraud. And, you know, and I love Peace Pilgrim. You know, Peace Pilgrim described the spiritual path as a series of hills and valleys, with each hilltop getting gradually higher than the next one. But the one thing you want to keep in mind is that, you know, if something really big comes up, a big fear comes up, or a big, you know, yours was kind of an unworthiness, a piece of the unworthiness cookie, right? Fraud is a piece of the unworthiness cookie. Yeah, so a big unworthiness comes up, a big guilt comes up, a big fear comes up. And if you successfully let it go, then you will have more peace. So what you want to remember is Peace Pilgrim said it's a series of hills and valleys. So what you want to remember is until you've let it all go, the peace is actually temporary. There will be another valley, which means something else is going to come up. And the reason for that is it's not all gone yet. But then the next hilltop is even higher. But then one
right
day...
Right as you said that, a giant hawk just flew by my window. But
yeah, after that, something else comes up, and you go back down into the valley, but then the next piece is even higher. And, you know, in the Course, what Jesus said was, you don't know your advances from your retreats. And that's because when people are feeling happy and joyous and peaceful, they think they're doing good on the spiritual path. And then when the crap starts coming up and they're, you know, laying on the sofa with their tongue hanging out and they can't deal with it anymore, they think they're failing. Actually, that's where the progress is made. That's where the letting go happens. That's where the giving it up happens. You can't make the progress without the valleys. So that's why Jesus said, you don't know your retreats from your advances. You think your advances are retreats. They're not. Right? They're I mean, sure, it feels awful. It feels awful. But that's where your opportunities lie. So,
I guess it's just a matter of continuing to just sit through those and release any repulsion that you have from those awful experiences, because until the purification is done, I guess they're going to keep coming up, right?
Yeah, and what begins to happen at some point is you find yourself on the hilltops much longer. Like, you may be on the hilltop for 6 whole months. And then go down into a valley and something comes up. And then, you know, so at least in the beginning, it seems like it's much more rapid, the up and down, up and down. And then it seems to slow a little bit. And you also have more confidence in what the valleys are. You do get to the point where you don't see them as failures. You don't see them as slipping back. You realize here's another opportunity, more ego coming up. And you're much more skilled at the letting go process, you know. So the valleys will last shorter, and the hilltops will last longer as the time goes on. But until it's done, you know, when you hear people talking about walking through the final doorway, what happens at the final doorway? Well, what has 100% of them said happens at the final doorway?
More terror and fear.
Fear, yeah, because there was still something else had to be let go. And then the ultimate peace that you can never, the peace that passes understanding, the peace you can never fall away from again, when that ultimate fear is let go. And the ultimate fear, of course, is letting go of the sense of self, right? But it's not over till it's over. So enjoy the peace, but don't become attached to it. Don't see it as success. Because if you see peace as success, then when you go back into your next opportunity, you'll see it as a failure. All right, let's see what else I collected here. We only have 4 minutes left, so it doesn't matter that I didn't finish with you guys. I have number 95, 121, and 127. I said let's look at them together. So let's start with 95. We may only have time to read them, but let's look and see what they say. Oh, this one, you guys, I know you guys remember this quote. I don't know why, but I just don't doubt that you remember this quote. Some events purify the mind and some stain it. Moments of deep insight and all-embracing love purify the mind, while desires and fears, envies and anger, blind beliefs and intellectual arrogance pollute and dull the psyche. Now let's look at 121. 121 says, one should positively strive to enthrone wisdom in one's heart, for the mind is unsteady like a monkey, and one should then avoid unwise company. So what I'm linking here, and we'll go to one more quote, but what I'm linking here is staining the mind and unwise company. This is what I want to talk about. Let's go on to 127. Ideas and experiences leave their mark on the mind, which form the impressions or conditioning tendencies, which are for the most part latent or dormant. And that's all I'm going to stop, because that's what I'm linking. So I'm linking the staining the mind, the unwise company, and ideas and experiences leaving their mark, and it's dormant, right? So what I want to talk about, now some of you in your journals captured the essence of this, but some of you, I felt, were still avoiding what this is saying. So I know that it's not really, some of you thought unwise company was judging the company. Unwise, like judging the people as unwise. Unwise company is not judging the people as unwise. It's a comment about your discernment in spending time with them. It's unwise for you to spend time with some individuals. It's unwise company for you. And the reason for that is some things stain the mind. right? And leave their impressions. And not all company is positive and helpful for you while you're awakening. And it doesn't take a lot of discernment to really figure that out. For example, let's assume that, drinking is something that you don't necessarily do at home alone. But when you get with certain people, you find yourself drinking and you know you drink too much. You know it. Every time you're with those people, you drink too much. Or maybe it's certain people when you hang out with them. Every time you're with them, you get into the gossip game. Or certain people when you hang out with them, every time you hang out with them, you get into political debates. What this is really saying is your current vibrational level is not yet high enough to be with those individuals without getting pulled down. Therefore, it's in your best interest not to hang out with those individuals. It's not a judgment against them. It's a comment on this staining of the mind, on these leaving impressions. Now, your purpose right now is to awakening. And certainly, if you were enlightened, you can hang out with anybody. You know, there's no doubt about that. But are you enlightened? I mean, come on. You know, we got to be honest. And you know when you can be with someone and not get pulled down. And you know when every time you're with those people, you get pulled down. You know it, right? And so what this is suggesting is if an enlightenment is your goal, awakening is your goal, that you avoid things that stain the mind, right? And sometimes that is certain company. So a few of you hit that on the head, but I felt like a lot of you were kind of wanting to avoid what this was directly saying. You know, like you said something that was really cool. A lot of you said it, you know, the M Wise company is my thoughts. You know, that's true too. But this is really very specific. This is being very specific. This is talking about there are certain people that's not good for you to spend your time with right now. Again, because you are not yet at a high enough vibration. And as a result, when you're with them, you get pulled down into those habits again, and it's just not helping you move forward. Yeah, Jay. I guess it's okay if Jay answers a question. Don, I know we're supposed to close now. Okay, go ahead, Jay.
Oh, okay. Sometimes these quotes very rarely have these behavioral suggestions like this. Right? You notice that they're peppered in? Like most of them aren't like that. You know what I mean? Do you have any thought or comment on that?
No, I think that sages are usually talking about the mind, but that they can also just give practical advice. Another piece of practical advice that you will see sometimes show up, not often, but sometimes, and it's really important for students of non-duality and A Course in Miracles to hear, is sages will recommend that you take care of the body. It's the ego that says the body's not real, so to hell with it. Oh, to heck with it. Sorry, Don. But that's the ego. You know, the sages will tell you to take care of the body. So sages do sometimes give wise advice, and the reason they give wise, practical advice is because they're talking to an ignorant audience. And ignorant audiences are like children who sometimes need some wise, practical advice. Like I can just see the spiritual ego while you're hanging out with people drinking too much and gossiping. I can see the spiritual ego saying things like, just accept it as it is. That's a misuse of accept it as it is, you know. So sages sometimes step in and say, hey, come on. Don't go out and drink and gossip. It's not helping you. Right?
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah. If this is what you want. It's not that you're guilty for doing it. It's just that it's not helping you. You know, if you were trying to be in the Olympics, which I know we're all too old to do that now, but if you were trying to be in the Olympics, your coach would probably tell you not to go out and drink either, right? It's not going to help you with that either, right? So it's just depending on whether you want to reach this goal or not and what's helping you and what's not helping you. All right, we've gone over a little bit, so mwah! I'll see you guys tomorrow. I'll be here both for the Enlightened Leadership, and I'll be here for Nisargadatta. All right, have a good evening.